Next item, Blue Crab, review and update.
I know it's been a long day. We have a little bit of information for you on blue crabs. And I guess, counting this meeting, there'll be three meetings where we'll be talking about blue crab management. There's a lot of information contained in your evaluation, a lot of data that staff has put together. Not going to go through any of that. If you have questions now or in the future about any of that, give us a call. We'll be glad to help you with it. But there are some things you need to be aware of in the way of new information. First of all, we do not yet have the results of the 2010 winter dredge survey. That will be available in early April and will be presented to you at the April meeting. So without that data, it's difficult to make any management decisions, as you can understand. But we are prepared to ask you to go to public hearing next month on two issues, which I'll get to in a few minutes. In addition to that, there's a new crab stock assessment that has been prepared and is undergoing peer review, scientific peer review, today and tomorrow up in Baltimore. That's where Rob O'Reilly is. He's up participating in that peer review. That peer review will become, when it's done, and if it survives the peer review, that stock assessment, rather, will become the new best available science on the blue crab. And it will change how we look at this resource. Remember back all of the graphs that we've shown you in the past that describe reference points for the population, reference points being the thresholds and targets for exploitation and stock abundance. Those numbers, we know, having seen drafts of the stock assessment, are going to change, and they're going to change significantly. So the reference points that we thought described what a healthy crab population was are going to move higher. And that means the data that we've seen in recent years, while it shows that the crab population has rebounded tremendously, is not yet quite where it needs to be based on these new reference points. Now, I know some people are going to say we're changing the rules in the middle of the game, but state law requires us to use the best available science. And if that science were to come back and say everything is rosy, we can lift all the regulations, I'm sure you wouldn't hesitate to do that. In this case, it's not going to say that. It's going to suggest, again, that the targets that we should be shooting for are higher than what we thought at this time last year. So that's going to play a major role in your decisions in April and May. We hope to have for you in April a very clear depiction of exactly what that stock assessment will show. Right now, it's not public information because it hasn't gone through that peer review. But as soon as it does, I'm hoping that NOAA, who has overseen the document, will allow it for its release and for its presentation to you. So that's the first piece of new information. The second piece is several months ago, we commissioned Dr. Jim Kirkley at the Virginia Institute of Marine Science to do a capacity analysis of the crab pot and peeler pot fisheries. Because the fishery is starting to rebound and there are people on a waiting list, about 300, slightly more than 300, who someday hope to get back into this fishery, we need to know whether the fishery can withstand those additional levels of effort. And so we went to Dr. Kirkley, who has performed these types of capacity analyses on a tremendous number of fisheries around the world. He's done a lot of work for international fishery organizations as well as for NOAA, and is regarded as one of the world's experts in this type of work. And he's here today to present briefly the results of that study. But before he comes up, I want to describe in a little bit more detail the two changes in the regulation that we are suggesting you go ahead and advertise for an April hearing and an April decision, recognizing that in April you'll have the new stock assessment and the results of the winter dredge survey in front of you and can decide whether to adopt those or not. The first, you'll recall, was a dispute over the line that defines the edge of the crab sanctuary up off the northern neck, this being Smith Point here. The current sanctuary is this green line. We had complaints from fishermen that this line excluded them from areas that were more than 30 feet deep and that they really desired to work in these areas. And so staff came up with a change in the line, which is this reddish color here. We presented that to the CRAB committee, and they liked it. We also submitted it to VIMS. VIMS was not happy with that line because portions of the area that would be opened in this area, they've identified as part of the deep water migratory corridor for pregnant female crabs coming down the bay. And so VIMS on their own came up with another suggestion, and that's the blue line, which would allow this area to be open but would give up this small triangular area, close that area as a compromise. The industry at the last CRAB committee meeting was not too happy with the VIMS proposal. They preferred the staff proposal, but then someone on the committee, I can't remember who it was, suggested a compromise line, which is this gray line. Staff can support that line. VIMS also supports that compromise, and the advisory committee supports that compromise, and the fishermen from the northern neck said they could live with it as well. So we feel pretty good that it's pretty darn close to unanimous, again, for support. So we want to advertise that change for a public hearing next month. The other change we want to make is also to the sanctuary. And again, the reason we're asking for an April hearing on this is because the sanctuary otherwise closes on May 1. So if you don't make decisions in April, you got to wait a year before you can do that. The second change is to delay closing of the sanctuary until May 15th. Everyone around the bay on the advisory committee had various measures that they wanted to change about the opening of the sanctuary, or the delaying the closing, if you will. The Tangierman wanted the northern part of the sanctuary open for the first 2 weeks in May. The guys who fished down off Virginia Beach were looking for areas to be open. And rather than trying to develop small pockets of the sanctuary that might close late, we decided to just simply open the entire sanctuary for the first 2 weeks in May. So we'd ask that you advertise that for a public hearing as well for the April meeting. Recognizing, again, if we see something in the dredge survey results, staff reserves the right to change our opinion about the two things that you're advertising.
It's a pleasure of the commission on the request by staff for a public hearing. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would accept staff's recommendation and move that we advertise a public hearing in April to establish these two issues.
Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Public hearing, Jack.
In terms of timeline, since at the April meeting we will have new stock assessment, dredge survey results, we will stand before you and ask for other changes to the rules on crabbing for a public hearing in May. So you're going to have two public hearings. You'll have one that you just approved, and then another one in May where you'll have to address the yearly closure of the winter crab dredge survey and any other issue that comes up. In terms of other issues, about a month ago, while we get good advice from the advisory committee, and they generally have their finger on the pulse of the industry, we decided to send out a industry-wide survey of the fishermen to determine if there were other issues that fishermen thought should be changed. And we mailed out over 1,600 surveys. A copy of the survey is being handed out to you. We received back about 40% of those. There are a few still coming in, so we'll update and analyze further all of these data for you at the April or May meeting.
I'm going to make sure Mr. Fox gets a copy of that if he does not please.
Yeah. What you see on the screen are the results of the responses. The 12 issues or questions that we had of the fishermen were issues that have arisen over the last couple of years, whether they've been raised by individuals in the industry or by the advisory committee or by staff. They're not in any particular order or in any, you know, priority. The actual questions are on the survey itself, and what you see on the screen is just a paraphrase of that question. But with the exception of two cases, the number of individuals who thought that that particular issue was not a priority at all or a low priority far outnumbered the number of respondents who thought it was a high or highest priority. And the two exceptions, and this was a surprise to staff actually, was question E, which said, would you support an increase in the number of crab pots back to the original amounts? You'll recall we reduced those by 15% a couple years ago. And the daily work hour question, whether you wanted a change in that. So fishermen apparently would like to be able to work longer than the 8-hour workday and like to be able to set more crab pots. I think after you hear what Dr. Kirkley is going to have to say, you'll probably agree those probably aren't things that we should take up at this point. But you don't have to make a decision on that until we have all the information in April. And I'm not going to say any more about the survey, but if you have questions at a future meeting, we'll be glad to answer that. And that's all I have, unless you have questions, and I hope you take a few minutes to hear the results.
Robbins.
Dr. Kirkley's.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have one question of Jack. And Jack has laid out a timeline for us, and obviously the commission's actions will hinge on several pieces of information that we don't yet have or aren't quite available to us yet. But one of those, and it's a critical piece, is the new stock assessment. And that will include new reference points for both abundance and also for exploitation. The sense I had after Jack's briefing to the CRAB committee was that the exploitation was, relative to the new reference point, was relatively close, but there might be a little bit of room in there. And the issue, I think, is if we were to anticipate that, I think it would be very informative to go ahead and ask staff to start looking at how we might have potentially an extension of the season at the end of the pot season, because right now the full-time watermen have paid the heaviest burden during the recovery process, and if we were able to extend the pot season at the end of the current fishery, it would accrue to the benefit of the full-time crabber. And so, Jack, I just wanted to ask, is that something, could staff look at that? In other words, if exploitation could be increased by 3 or 4 or 5%, some amount we don't yet know, could you do at least some preliminary analysis of framing up what a bonus season might look like or an extension season at the end of the current pot season so that we might have an alternative to consider?
I think we could certainly do that. It's going to involve looking at past harvest patterns in November and see how they might
trend into
December. It's going to involve some assumptions, but I think we can get a good handle on it and present that information to them.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would ask
if there's not any objection to that, or if there's consensus.
Can we do by consensus?
Yeah. If we could ask staff to begin to look at that as a possibility for, you know, if we're able to scale the fishery up slightly. Again, we don't know yet because we don't have the assessment in hand. We don't have the reference points in hand. We don't have the winter dredge results. But if we're able to stabilize a little bit, that's an area where it might be beneficial.
In that same vein, and I know that we don't want to necessarily bring back all of the pots that they had allowed, but you know, the November-December fisheries doesn't bring quite the income, you know, because the market's, you know, really soft at that time. But if we had a smaller maybe increase in the number of pots they were allowed to set, you know, in the summertime, you know, the July, August, you know, September issue, that would really help the full-time watermen get the highest amount, you know, for the crabs that they catch when the market's the highest. So I don't know how that might play into the mix too, but I mean, I know if we brought all of the, you know, all of the pots back, that would probably be too much pressure, but
we can certainly evaluate that.
I appreciate
it. Just have to see what that number is going to be.
Yeah.
I just,
yeah, we don't
not,
know.
I'm not, I don't have warm and fuzzies about it, but then again, I'm not, certainly not inclined to agree with that.
I want to make one other point. The changes to the sanctuary, VIMS was supportive of those at this time, but made the point that if we make those changes this year, and this time next year, we see big changes in the results of the winter dredge survey, a big drop in recruitment or a drop in abundance.
We've messed up.
Then that's a clear signal we might need to reverse our action the following year. Just wanted to put that on the record. Mm. That's all I have.
All right. Anything? Any other questions? Dr. Kirkley, thank you for being here so long with us. Are we going to talk about rum today?
No, we're not talking about rum.
So you remember that talk?
Rum. Oh, yeah.
Random something?
Yeah.
I got you. Absolutely. Good to have you here, sir.
Anyway, I'm Jim Kirkley from Vims. It was about 2 months or so ago that Jack had asked me could I look at capacity in the blue crab fishery. That time I didn't understand what all the hoopla was about looking at capacity, and then explained about possible expansion or reentry of 326 individuals who had been locked out of the fishery for a while, so that's fine. I didn't come here today with a formal overhead presentation. I thought I'd be answering questions. But by now I imagine everybody received a copy of this draft report, I hope. Okay, good. What I'll do is I'll just try to take you through bits and pieces of it so you can understand what's been done. For a starter, capacity is an international issue. In the case of fisheries, it's international, but outside of fisheries, it's also international. Federal Reserve, Department of Commerce, they do surveys every year on two types of capacity. What could you produce under normal operating conditions, and what could you produce in the case of an emergency? I don't think we're concerned about an emergency here, but could crabbers produce if there was some kind of emergency? You know, so capacity is just a concept of your maximum capability to produce. That's all it is. Okay, and so with that in mind, there's a variety of ways of looking at it. I developed one approach in 1995 that I can't say it's caught on everywhere, but it's being used globally. So that's and plus FAO had me write a, whatever you call it, monograph or something, 260-some page booklet anyway on the subject and analysis. So yeah, and I've looked at I have looked at every single U.S. federally managed fishery, several states, inshore, state, territorial sea fisheries, the fisheries of numerous European nations. I declined at least one where Vietnam wanted an analysis of capacity for a bow and arrow fishery in some kind of stream. I kind of drew the line on that. Anyway, so the approach for looking at capacity here is a very, very simple approach, just so you know there's something behind it. It's not made up. It's what's called mathematical programming. What we're trying to do is we're trying to optimize, determine what the maximum output a firm or an industry could produce given their input levels, their factors of production, so to speak. In the case of the crab fishery, we have extremely limited data. We don't have number of pots by year, and we don't have number of pots by individual. We don't have vessel characteristics, engine horsepower, so forth and so on. So as you typically do in any kind of research analysis, you do the best you can with what you have. And that's what we pursued here. The data, just to make it quick, we did for two fisheries, the hard pot fishery and the fiddle pot fishery. Table 2.1 and table 2.2 in the report give you the data that's actually used in the analysis, which includes number of active potters and pounds that they supposedly harvested and number of trips they made. And we also use the baywide abundance. That's the only indicator we have for resource conditions. We don't have Virginia versus Maryland abundance, et cetera. But nevertheless, that comes into play there. From there, we do a very, very simple what's called estimation analysis of production technology. That's how you relate catch or product or output specifically to your factors of production. Right, and in this case here, we relate capacity output to number of trips, number of active licenses, and resource abundance again. And what you can do with that is you can play simulation games, you can change your abundance, you can change your number of active licenses, you can change your trips per active license, and see how total output or total landings of blue crabs might change in response. The way this approach works is there's a mathematical scoring system. Making this overly complicated, I know, and I'm sorry, but this thing you're optimizing is called a distance function, a distance between two points, right? And a distance equal to ones means everything's hunky-dory. You're operating full capacity, you're efficient, you're doing well. Scores greater than one means you could expand your output by that given percentage. For example, a score of 1.5 means your capacity output is 50% higher than what you actually did. Right, and we see this across the board in all industries. They can do better, they can do worse, or they do worse. What we found here, though, which I guess, I don't know, may be heartening or disheartening, depending on which side of the issues you are on, between 1994 and 2010, this hard pot fishery was pretty efficient in the Commonwealth. I mean, they were. There were some bad years there where they had some potentially serious excess capacity, like, probably the worst one here was 2003. We could have expanded their output by 30%. But when you start looking at 2009 and 10, 2009, the excess capacity is so small, so I don't think it cares. 2010, they're perfect. They're right on the board. There's no excess capacity. There's no problems. There's no issues, per se, so to speak of. Now, we looked at this in some very, very simple ways and making some changes in here. Everything in this report, the analysis in terms of projections into the future, is done relative to what happened in 2010. The estimates, the numbers, are based on everything over all times. But in terms of projected analysis, like if the abundance of blue crab increased 50%, we looked at how landings would have changed with an increase of 50% in the 2010 estimated abundance. Right, and in that case, you don't get huge increases from these changes in abundance. But 2010 abundance was 315 million crabs, and so we start iterating that down to 50%. You get an increase of about 4 million pounds. To me, that's not a lot. For blue crabs, it might be a lot. It might be a lot. And you find this very, very small increase in the peeler pot crab production, too. It's about 800,000 pounds, but a 50% increase in abundance. But again, you've got unique situations in 2010, the uniqueness being you're already at a very high abundance for that resource, supposedly. 315 million is one of the highest observed in that time period between 94 and 2010. So you don't get a big jump there. Where you start seeing the really killer type actions is when you allow new entrants or former participants into the fishery back in, and simultaneously they're going to increase their average number of trips. We can't project the number of trips they're going to make. I mean, we can play simulation games, mathematical games, and do other statistical analysis, but it's kind of hard to really get a good handle on how how they might change their number of trips. We've observed as high as almost 67 trips on average for active participant. And I think in 2010, it's something like 54 or 55 trips per active participant. We know nothing about the mix of the pots, et cetera. You know, all of which would just make the potential output even higher. So I think what this type of analysis is looking at, allowing more entrants into the fishery and playing games with their number of trips, it begs the question is, what level of risk is the commission willing to take by allowing more participants and knowing full and well you're going to allow for either an increase in total harvest or a decrease in each operator's individual's harvest? It's going to be one way or the other. You know, and what you find in crustacean fisheries, lobsters and crabs globally, is you tend to hit this maximum point of harvest, right? And then you get more participants, and that total harvest is about the same. Eventually, at some point, you hit some threshold, and everything comes crashing down on you. But what happens is you're expanding effort and holding your total output about the same, each participant's getting less and less. You know, so those are questions you start looking at in this type of analysis. Now, Rob O'Reilly came back pretty hot and heavy on me on this issue of the overfishing threshold and the desired target threshold. The desired target threshold for the region is 0.46, and the overfishing threshold is 0.53. When you start looking at the numbers relative to that, to those two definitions, you've got some substantial excess capacity in this fishery that would warrant reductions in fleet size, except for 2010. Every single year in there, I think it's 1997 and 2010 were the only years that you don't have this extreme excess capacity when measured against the biological reference points. And that, again, that begs the question is whether you allow 326 participants into the fishery. I kind of have my own take on it, but I'll keep my own take to myself. That's about what I had to say on this. If you've got any questions, I'll do my best.
Mr. Robbins, first, Mr. Tanker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Kirkley, I really appreciate this presentation today. And I had seen the document. It was complex, and I appreciate you coming to explain it to us. This is very, very helpful. I think one of the there are a couple of questions I have, and one relates to the relationship, and I think you just laid some of that out relative to the exploitation target, because that's really been one of the key questions as we've gone through the reform of the fishery and, you know, trying to better align the harvesting capacity represented by the number of permits with the potential biological yield and getting those better in line. And so I think the analysis is informative for that. The other thing, though, the way it's set up, it uses active licenses, where an active license is a license that I think worked any period of time in that year, whether it was a day or 20 days or 100 days, right? And so within the analysis, if you say there are 1,000 licenses, just for example, there is still a lot of latency, if you will, within that pool of total licenses, because the way the fishery is managed, we don't have any tiering system, for example, with the licenses. They're any license could be used on a full-time basis, potentially. So we have a large cohort of licenses that work fewer than 10 days a year, maybe over 100 licenses or like that. Then we have about 250 licenses, roughly, that work over 100 days a year. And so that's your full-time group. You've got a group that barely uses the license, and then you've got a group that's active on a part-time basis. And so, you know, I'm trying to understand the recommendations of the analysis relative to that potential issue as well, because, you know, I think it stands to reason that if somebody's going to get into the fishery now, the most likely licenses to be sold are those that are relatively inactive. If somebody's having to pay now a premium on the license, given the history of the buyback, et cetera, they're probably more likely to put it to use. And so if we had, just within the current system, notwithstanding any potential entrants from the waiting list, if we have transfers of licenses occurring, there's still a potential for increase in effort within the current system. So I'm wondering if that is there any way to look at it
in a little more detail relative to that issue of latency within the current system, and answer the question, for example, of how many full-time permits can the fishery sustain, and how many part-time permits can the fishery sustain? Because right now we really don't have any management control over that question. And those to me are long-term questions. I mean, we can manage on a year-to-year basis the length of the season, these other input controls and technical constraints, but the question of how many licenses can the fishery support biologically is, I think, something that should feed into the long-term plans for the management of the fishery. But I'm just asking, is it possible to look at the data and look at the level of activity on the individual licenses and determine what represents a reasonable number of full-time permits, what represents a reasonable number of part-time permits? I mean, you have to make assumptions about how much they would work, but I'm just asking, is that a possibility to look at that question?
The short version answer, depending upon the brief guys here, is yes. But that depends upon whether the data available to support whether or not this guy's taken X number of trips per year or less than that. If those data are available, you can stratify it and redo the analysis. I'm a professor, so I want to make things more complicated than necessary. Okay. That makes me look like I'm doing something. All right. This type of analysis, 90% of it's the data. The analysis itself takes less than 5 seconds. Okay, so copy-paste Excel data, and then run the models, get the numbers, and then, of course, maybe another 10% is writing it up in a report form. What you're asking has been a question that we've addressed on a variety of fisheries around the world. One of the worst cases at the Pacific Northwest. They've got so, and in the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, total fisheries, $8 million, they wanted the same type of analysis, buy this, buy that, and you're trying to explain to them, your average income per worker is very low because you have so many part-timers. You're looking at an owner-operator. He has 9 dependents, of which probably at least half of them are working that little boat, but only maybe a week a year. So it's a stratification issue, and if you can stratify it, you can do what you're asking quite easily.
Mr. Tiger, do you have a question?
At the same time, it seems to me that there must be some efficiencies for people who have the large pot licenses. Is that one of the conclusions you reach with the data that you have, or is that the opposite?
No, we didn't reach that conclusion. The conclusion we reached with this analysis is that the fishery in aggregate form is very efficient over time.
Right.
The question you're posing would take a more detailed data set, and at one time we talked about stratifying the data by this and that, and we found out we really couldn't do it that way. I originally said, can you give me a number of pots? Can I get what kind of pot license they have? Maybe yes, maybe no, not over the whole time frame. It got muddled. And okay. So it became do the best you can with what you have. If the data are available in that data set, in the information, you could do what you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it, but only if the data are available.
Mr. Schick?
I just wanted to say thank you for bringing me back cold sweats of 30 years ago when I was in my business class forecasting. Modeling class.
I'm glad I didn't need to do it.
but it did come out, I mean, through 30 years of fog, it did come out. I understood what you were saying, and I think it's good information. And I just wanted to say thank you.
Further questions? Dr. Rilley, thank you very much
for
everything.
Thank you very much.
It means a lot, and it's a great help to us. And believe me, when you speak, it's like a OEF hut, and we listen.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to waddle back to my car now.
Thank you.
Take care, Doctor. Any other business to come before the commission? Adjourned.